are in verses 10 through 20. It's really great to be vertical again. Good to be with you all in church. The title of my message today is Be Careful What You Say. Now, some of you may recall those days when you were parenting. Some of us are still parenting grandchildren. And in the early development stage of parenting, I referred to this stage as the era of the mouth. Some children have a tendency to put objects in their mouth. It's their way of discovering what life is all about. It may be a toy, may be a fist. Whatever they find, they have a tendency to stick it in their mouth. Remember those days? However, I have noticed something, that has not been a problem with Reese. I have never seen her put something in her mouth other than food. Now, our great-grandson is another story. According to his grandma, our daughter, he puts things in his mouth. Now, putting sand or rocks in your mouth sounds detestable to us adults, but in some cases, it would be desirable. For example, when you study the Greek culture, some of the Greek philosophers taught their students how to articulate a word by putting stones in their mouth. There's a particular crane that lives in the mountains of southern Turkey, the Tarsus Mountains, and when they fly, they become attractive to eagles. And eagles swoop in on them when they hear them cackle. It's a very loud noise when they fly, especially, so that the more experienced cranes have learned that if you put rocks in their mouths, and we are told that some cranes will do this, they will put rocks in their mouths when they fly, and that takes away the tendency of wanting to cackle so that they won't become lunch for an eagle. And so they have learned that when you watch your mouth, it just might save your life. And that is the subject matter that we are going to delve into this morning. Be careful what you say. Now, I've said this before, but it bears repeating, that when I study the Bible, I first study to whom the author is writing to. Who's he writing to? And secondly, I take a look at the culture of that day in which he was writing his letters or his book. And then the third thing that I do is I go back and I comb very carefully to find timeless principles that I can apply to my life. And so this is why we are going so slowly through various books on Sunday morning. Now, it's not just the cranes that have a problem with their mouths. There's another creature that has a problem with their mouth, and they are called a human being. Our mouths can get us into trouble. They can bless us. They can bless other people. They can encourage other people. They can confuse other people. And sometimes they can cause a lot of damage by the words that we speak. Our mouths can be very, very busy. And in their busyness, they can demand attention. In one instance, they might say, "Feed me." And so we have diets to curb our eating habits. Other instances, what comes out of our mouth, Jesus said it this way, is what defiles a person, what comes out of the mouth. Things that we say, how we say it, the tone of voice in which we speak, the words, sometimes they hurt. Now, language is an interesting subject. You can certainly learn to speak English in our country well. As most of you know my story, I was unable to speak clearly until I was in the fourth grade. And no one could understand me in our family except my little sister. And we played a lot together, so she could understand my language. No one else could. So my dad decided I needed some help with my speech. And so for the fourth grade and the fifth grade, I spent the lunch hour with a speech therapist. And then in the sixth grade, my dad brought home a Webcore tape recorder. And he said, "Son, if you're going to learn to talk, you have to listen to yourself." And I tell you what, the first time I heard myself on tape, I was so discouraged and depressed. And I was in denial. "That's not me." But it was me. And then all the way through school, I had different school teachers tell me that I needed to take all the speech courses I could take. And so I did. And one of the most effective speech courses that I took was a course in phonetics, and I use that method a lot today as I prepare my messages or I prepare a speech. But words say meaning, have a meaning one way in our country, but the very same word that we speak has a different meaning in another country, like England or Scotland or Australia. They don't work well. For instance, one of the things that I like to say anyway, when someone gives me some bad news or when I'm going through a bad experience, I will say, "Huh, that was really a bummer." How many of you have used that phrase? That was really a bummer. And it usually has "dude" attached to it. "That was really a bummer, dude." And I find myself saying that quite often. Well, you don't want to say that in England or Scotland or Australia, because "bummer" here means something really bad, bad turn of events. But in England, Scotland, or Australia, it means one's backside, one's rear end. And so, especially if you are addressed in a crowd and if you are a preacher, you don't say "that was really a bummer" in England, Scotland, or Australia, because it would offend people. It sends out the wrong message. For example, there was a lady, she was from England, and she visited Switzerland, where she wanted to attend school. And while she was at the school in Switzerland, she met up with the schoolmaster, and he gave her a tour of the campus. Showed her the different rooms and how it was laid out and where she would be staying. And so she went back home to England to pack her bags and moved back to Switzerland to go to school. While she was back home packing her bags, putting together the stuff that she was going to take with her to live in Switzerland, she remembered that the schoolmaster had failed to show her the WC room. "Where was the WC located in conjunction to my room?" she asked by letter. Now in England, a WC is a water closet. It means bathroom. that means restroom. So if you go to England, you will see WC. That means the restroom. So here she is. She writes a letter to the schoolmaster, and she says, by the way, I didn't see any WC. Where is it? Especially in conjunction with my room. Well, the schoolmaster in Switzerland wasn't efficient in English, and he didn't know what WC meant. He thought about it, and he talked to some of his colleagues about it, asked some of his friends, what's WC? Well, the only thing that they could come up with was the initials WC, which stood for the West Side Chapel, a small chapel on the campus. And so he wrote back to her this letter to this English gal, and imagine you are an English woman thinking what WC means in your mind, and you get this letter. My dear madam, I take great pleasure in informing you that the WC is situated 9 miles from your room. It's in the center of a beautiful grove of pine trees surrounded by lovely grounds. It's capable of holding 229 people. And it's open on Sundays and Thursdays only. As there are a great number of people expected during the summer months, I suggest you come early, although usually there's plenty of standing room only. Now, this is an unfortunate situation, especially if you are in the habit of going regularly. Miscommunication. Get the drift? It may be of some interest to know that my daughter was married in the WC. And it was there that she met her husband. I can remember the rush there were for seats. There were 10 people to every seat, especially, usually they're occupied by only one. It was wonderful to see the expression on their faces. You'll be glad to hear that a good number of people bring their lunch and they make a day of it, while those who can't afford to go by car arrived just in the nick of time. I would especially recommend your ladyship to go on Thursdays when there is a piano accompaniment. The acoustics are excellent, and even the most delicate sounds can be heard everywhere. The newest addition is a bell donated by a wealthy resident of the district. It rings every time a person enters the WC. A bazaar is to be held to provide plush seats for all, since the people feel it is long overdue and needed. Now, my wife is a rather delicate sort, so she cannot attend regularly. It's been almost a year since she last went, and naturally, it pains her very much not to be able to go more often. I shall be delighted to reserve the best seat for you, where you shall be seen by all. Signed, the schoolmaster. Now, he's thinking of a chapel. She's thinking of a restroom. So words can be very helpful, or they can be very confusing and even hurtful. And so here we are in the 10th chapter of Ecclesiastes. And Solomon is writing in poetic fashion, and he's coming to a conclusion about life and what life is all about as we approach the last two chapters. And this is the poetic part of Solomon's journal on the meaning of life. Solomon looks around life. He's tried different things. He's observed different things. And now in poetic fashion, he writes about the fool, the folliness. And he talked about this a few weeks ago, where we talked about the portrait of a fool. But now, in terms of the mouth, what goes into the mouth and what comes out of the mouth, because the mouth reveals what's in the heart. Jesus said it this way, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And the fool will show his identity in three ways that he misuses his mouth right here in chapter 10. We only have time to talk about one of them today. Next week we will talk about the second and the third one. And so this is the outline for these 10 verses. And the first thing that he talks about, three ways Solomon says we misuse our mouth. Today we're going to be talking about babbling. Babbling your words. Ever hear of someone, all they do is talk, 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 talk? They can't get a word in. And so you go away and you have a tendency to say, well, boy, he sure is a babbler mouth. She sure is a babbler mouth. The misuse of the mouth. Well, let's look at these verses. Verse 11, look what it says. A serpent may bite when it's not charmed. The babbler is no different. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. Verse 14, a fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? Verse 15, the labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to get into the city. That is called babbling. Babbling. A wise man once said, the best way to save face is to keep the bottom portion of it closed. Pretty good advice. The babbler could use that piece of advice. Now, speech is generally how we communicate. I say generally because sometimes we communicate by our body language. You can read someone like a book just by observing the body language. A look on their face. Nonverbal communique says a lot, speaks volumes. Sometimes we communicate by sign language. And there are times that our emotions run so deep that no word is adequate to express how we feel and what we feel. Right? But generally, we use speech. Now, here's the question. How important are the words that we choose? Does it really matter what we say? Well, James would say in chapter 3 of his book, you better believe it does. Look what he says. Because that tongue might be small, but it can start a huge fire. And just like a ship is turned by a small rudder, so life is turned by a tongue. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. So if anyone who is never at fault in what they say, we would say that person's perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. In other words, if in your life you can, by discipline, control what you say, it shows then that you have discipline in all the other areas of life, because that is the toughest. Learning when to open our mouth and then when to keep it shut. Amen? Now, Solomon had a lot to say about words. As you read through the book of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. By the way, these books are called what in the Bible? These are called the wisdom books in the Bible. And one discovers, as you read through Solomon's writings, that he uses terms like lips, mouth, words, 147 times, just in his writings. So here he's talking about babbling, and he would say in the first two verses we read, number one, that babbling can be destructive in nature. Look how he puts it. A serpent may bite when it's not charmed. The babbler is no different. So the body and effect of certain words, phrases, that has edges on them, that communication can carry words of a wise man's mouth. They can be gracious, or they can cause a lot of hurt. Words can be said carelessly. We can just spew them out of our mouth. And when we spew them out of our mouth, that has a tendency to hurt other people. Words spoken cannot be recalled. So we need to be wise in choosing the words that we say. Proverbs 12:18 says this, "There is one who speaks like the piercing of a sword." Do you know anybody who is a sharp-tongued individual? Because of whatever has happened in his or her life, there's now this biting edge. They have a tendency to take on negativity and a lot of things that they say. And they can turn a positive into a negative very quickly. Just a little, they become verbal terminators. And we're all tempted to do that. Fact of the truth was known, we've all done that. How many times have we said something, and no sooner does it leave our mouth than we say, I should not have said that. I wish I could bring it back. It's too late. Words spoken cannot be recalled. Damage has been done. And then we move into damage control mode. And this is how that goes. Well, you know, after all, I really didn't mean what I said. And we counterattack that. Oh, yes, you did, because you just said it. There's a publication called Medicine at Work. It's put out by the Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, highlighting the importance of words spoken to patients who were being prepped for surgery, and how that careless speech needs to be watched by those in the surgical room. Nurses and doctors and other staff there that is prepping a patient for surgery, and they are being put to sleep, and the patient hears certain things subconsciously that can bring abject fear to their heart. Here's the article. As the anesthetic is given for surgery, deadly fear may strike in. A patient that when he hears something, cringes when he hears the words, "Okay, I'm going to shoot him now." And that means he's getting the needle ready to give him an anesthetic that will put him to sleep. But imagine being a patient, you're going under, okay, and you hear these words, "I'm going to shoot him now," or hook up the monitor, says the article, "Monitor to a drug patient may sound like a monster. Or the doctor may say in disgust, 'You know what? This just isn't my day.' How would you like to hear that subconsciously as you're being prepped for surgery?" I don't think so. CBS ran a special, and several other networks had this as well, on Karen Carpenter. How many of you are familiar with the Carpenters? Go way back in the 50s and 60s. One of their favorite songs that they made a big hit out of was "We've Only Just Begun." Remember that song? One of my favorites. I have several other albums, by the way. Well, years ago, she was in a group with her brothers called the Carpenters. And several years ago, she died unexpectedly at the age of 32 of a sudden heart attack. The heart condition was brought on by eating disorder known as anorexia. But the eating disorder, this compulsion to lose weight, was brought on by a remark that she heard by a reviewer of the songs that they were singing. And when the reviewer referred to her as Richard's chubby sister, those words were biting words. They sunk deep. And she went on an eating disorder, and that triggered a heart attack. How many times have you seen it on the news? Where some bullies another person and says derogatory things about that person, and that sets that person off, and they never recover. Sometimes they take their own life because of that. Look at verse 13. The very end says, the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. Now, you're not just going to hurt other people if you are a babbler. You're going to eventually hurt yourself. You and I can get hurt. I might paraphrase it by saying it this way. A sharp tongue invites a split lip. You may say certain things. The other person may do something about it. Like put a fist through your lips. Crack it open. Now, if you go on in verse 13, he continues the thought of babbling to say that this kind of speech has no content. Look what he says. It is devoid of meaningful messages. Verse 13. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. I think the thought is this type of a person, the babbler, just starts talking. They like to hear themselves talk, I guess. And there's no good premise that they begin with. It's a ridiculous premise. Might be brought on by paranoia, might be brought on by delusions, might be brought on by superstition. So the end result is the conclusion of what they are going to say is even weirder than what they said at the outset. And that is opposed to what Solomon wrote one time in the book of Proverbs. In the 12th chapter of that beautiful book, Solomon says it this way, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. Isn't that picturesque? A word fitly spoken, just at the right time, in the right way, is beautiful, is framed in silver. Apples of gold and settings of silver. By the way, there's an excellent book for you to read if you haven't read it yet by Florence Littauer, and it's called Silver Boxes, an excellent book on communication. Mark Twain once said the difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning, and the lightning bug. Get the message? Worlds apart, they are related in name only, aren't they? Lightning bug. Lightning. One's powerful, magnificent, the other one is just a bug. Speech is like that. There are certain words that are said that, okay, technically they're part of the language, but they are devoid of any meaningful, substantive content. They're empty. Empty words. Many examples could be given, but I think profanity is one of those examples. Profanity, well, you can't escape it. It's everywhere. Turn on the TV, go to the movies, you hear it all the time. Empty four-letter words. For some, they can't communicate without putting in a swear word. You hear it in Starbucks. One pastor I read about even heard it in church. He said, you'd be surprised what goes on in some of these mega church parking lots after church is over. It's an interesting place to discover where some of these words are used. We pastored in Lawton, Oklahoma for a while, and a delivery man was telling me he was delivering some supplies to this church, and he said, you'd be amazed. Here's these two deacons out receiving the contents I was delivering, and they were swearing like pagans, and they were part of the church. Wow. Now, usually profanity is associated with humor. That's why it's so prevalent on television, late night shows. Some of these stand-up comics use, they're going to get laughs. Now, you know why they get laughs when they use profanity? Because they use, in my opinion, stupid words. And stupid people will laugh at them. It's funny. No, it's not. Dumb. We don't need to say anything like that. USA Today did a little article. They said researchers have monitored 2 weeks of primetime programming on NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox Network and found that the words that were once banned are now heard once every 5 minutes on primetime sitcoms. In 1 year, primetime television will air 23,566 uses of profanity. And it goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway. This is not the language that is befitting to a believer. It's empty talk. And it doesn't fit the profile of a believer because we represent God. The Apostle Paul said in Colossians, let your speech always be filled with grace, seasoned with salt, that you might know how to answer every man so that the children of the king should use the language of the court, God's language. What about this guy that was traveling on the airplane? He was a salesman traveling on the airplane, and he was drunk. He was a drunk salesman traveling on an airplane, and he happened to sit next to Billy Graham, who was alive at that time. And this guy was loose with his speech. He was drunk, and he was drinking, and he was swearing. And Billy Graham was sitting next to him, and he turned to him, and just imagine how this conversation went. And Billy Graham says, are you getting paid anything for all the swearing that you do? Now, if you're traveling and you're that guy and you're sitting next to Billy Graham and you hear the voice of Billy Graham, that would be somewhat haunting, don't you think? Are you paid for anything for the swearing that you do? He says, oh no, I do it for nothing. And Billy said, you do it for nothing? Boy, you sure work cheap, don't you? You throw aside your character as a gentleman. You inflict pain on your friends. You break one of God's commandments. You endanger your own soul, all for nothing? You certainly work cheap. You work too cheap. Now, I would think that if you were that kind of a guy that is waiting for God to speak to you, and you happen to be sitting next to Billy Graham, that would be one of those times when you would hear the voice of God speaking to you, the way Billy Graham talks. So, Solomon shows us that babbling, by its very nature, is disproportionate to the need. There's just too many words. It goes on and on and on. You ever listen to someone that has diarrhea of the mouth and he said to anything, when's this guy going to shut up? Or when is she going to shut up? You ever been there? So, what do? You let him talk. And you listen. And when they come up for air, that's your cue to break in and turn the conversation to another subject. A fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? The labors of fools worries them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. According to those who keep statistics, listen up. You speak enough words every day, as I do, to fill a book 50 pages, a 50-page booklet. In a year, you will have produced enough verbiage to produce 132 volumes, each with 400 pages. In a lifetime, that's over 3,000 volumes with 1,500,000 pages together. Words that we speak. Now, some can speak a whole lot, and others don't. Of the four temperaments, which one do you think has the greatest difficulty in learning how to control what they say and when they say it? There's the sanguine, there's the choleric, there's the phlegmatic, and there's the melancholy. Out of those four, which one do you... Has anyone studied the four temperaments? I know Sharon has. It's the sanguine, isn't it, Sharon? The phlegmatic, they're cool. They're slow to speak. So is the melancholy. The choleric is right next to the sanguine. But anyway, even a fool, if he holds his lips, Solomon says, is perceived to be wise. You're just not saying anything, and yet you're perceived to be wise. Maybe you're pondering, being pensive. Some people might think because you don't say anything, you're wise. Not necessarily so. Did you know that the Lord's Prayer is 56 words? Those are 56 words of very meaningful communication with God. The Gettysburg Address has 266 words. The Gettysburg Address, 266 words. The Ten Commandments, 290. Some words, depending upon which version you read, might be a little more. And the Declaration of Independence has right around 300 words. And listen to this. The recent government order setting the price of cabbage has over 26,000 words. I think they could say, put the price of cabbage in a lot less words than that. Babbling, someone said, is when the brain and the mouth don't engage at the same time. They're not in sync. So the illustration is you just turn on the hose and you just let the water run. You're talking before you're thinking. Notice in verse 14, no man knows what is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? In other words, this guy is talking so much that nobody can give him any instruction, any direction of what's coming ahead in the future. Can't tell him anything. He's doing all the talking. He's not receiving any instruction. One time I had this couple in the office a long time ago. He was the one that was complaining about what a terrible marriage he was in. So they both came. Something I've learned over the years, the one who complains the most about a troubled marriage, they're the ones that is at the heart of that trouble, if the truth were known. Well, this couple showed up and he began to talk. He talked, talk. And I said, hey, finally, hold it. I said, I'm not here just for you to bend my ear. I've heard it all. From your perspective, what's going on in your marriage? What are you doing to cause it to create log jams in your relationship with your wife? Talk. And she was willing to go to work on trying to fix the trouble spots. She really was. But he was doing all the talking. And so finally I said, well, that's enough. I'm sorry, but I really can't do any help for you. Solomon says he doesn't even know how to go to a city. That's probably an old phrase similar to ours when we speak. You know, that person doesn't even have enough sense to come in out of the rain. That's what Solomon is saying here. He hasn't even listened to get instructions, directions, or how to get to town. Now, this is something about the babbler, and if you've ever been in an audience of one, you know what I'm about to say is absolutely true. Don't save yourself time trying to straighten out a babbler, because I've discovered it's an absolute waste of time, because they already know it all. They don't want your counsel. They just want an audience where they can talk. And so I go along with the program for a while. I nod my head, oh, is that right? Wow, must be tough. So on and so forth. But it's an absolute waste of time for me to try to counsel a babbler, because they have all the answers. They don't want answers, they want echoes. Or they want you to pat them on the back and kind of accommodate them. That is what a babbler is. So, there's two more misuses of the tongue. We'll get into it next week. But I direct your attention to the video screen. An old proverb reads, "The ability to speak several languages is an asset, but the ability to keep your mouth shut in one language is priceless." Well said. James says it this way, James chapter 1, verse 19. "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to hear." We have two ears, you know, one tongue. "Quick to hear and slow to speak and slow to become angry. Because, verse 20, human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." Big problem that a lot of us have is that when you are engaged in a communique with someone and you're listening to them talk, what's going through your mind is you really aren't listening to them, because subconsciously you are preparing yourself for the answer that you're going to give when they have a moment of silence. It's true. So, let's take the advice of James and Solomon. Be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to get angry. Amen? So, I'll stand together. I appreciate Dan pinch hitting for me last Sunday. He always does a good job. But I'm glad to be back in the saddle again. We're going to...